It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. We're back once again on the Coming Out Lounge, where we step out, we step up, and we step in every day to live in our most powerful truth. And today we're going to get on a little bit of a soapbox because I want to give my gay brothers, my gay male brothers, some really good information today about who you are, how you show up in the world, what kind of sex lives you're having, and help you really step in to being who you're meant to be. And don't let anything scare you, whether it be HIV, AIDS, whether it be using PrEP or not using PrEP. It's all your own personal decision. And I know that one of the greatest fears for most gay men is that you might contract HIV. But in this day and age, there's really no reason to. If you use your head, if you do the right stuff, whether you play safe, you don't play safe, there's lots of ways to make this thing work. And I'm not advocating not playing safe. I'm just saying you got to wrap your head around the right stuff instead of being like those who are going to wrap this whole HIV AIDS thing around their hateful fingers and point to us gay men and say that we're going to be the demise of the human race. So, okay, I'm kind of off my soapbox, so to speak. But in order to help us really, truly explore all this, I brought a really cool guy, and his name is Damon Jacobs. He is a PrEP specialist. He's a marriage and family therapist. He's been on his soapbox ever since PrEP and Truvada have come out. In fact, in some places, his hashtag is known as the Truvada whore. I love it, love it, love it. And I'm so excited to have him here with me because we're going to go all over the place. And this is really a show dedicated to mostly the gay guys, but I hope everybody else listens because this affects each and every one of us in the human race. Welcome to the podcast, Damon.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Yeah, I'm excited. And, you know, we came across each other through some mutual friends on the radio show Outspoken, and I've seen and listened to a couple of your segments on their show. I'm like, okay, I want this guy on mine. So let's just kind of dive in. What really got you in that space where you just said, I'm going to take a stand on this PrEP issue, I'm going to take a stand on HIV stuff? What was it for you that drove you into going, I'm going to be this advocate?
Well, I'm glad you're asking because those are actually two different tracks. Yep, I have been involved in HIV prevention since 1991,
right?
Because I've worked in the field or volunteered or felt really called upon to use my role as a healer in our community to help people learn how to be healthy and empowered about their personal pleasure and sexuality. Mm-hmm. So that goes all the way back to 91.
And I'm going to jump in here because I would love what you just said, Damon. I love that you position this as a healer in our community. I think so many people don't realize, many of us, myself included, and what you just said, we do stand in that space where, I mean, not like we're magicians, but we try to heal our community around all the bullshit that shows up, not only within our own community, but what's being lobbed at us from outside. So I just wanted to say thank you for using that terminology, because I think it's very, very powerful when we come at this from that perspective. So, okay, now, dear, carry on with your story.
And that's important to me because I've always been interested in psychology and therapy. And mm-hmm. It sounds weird, but even as a small child, I wanted to be a therapist. And then when I came out as gay in the late 80s and started going through school and started doing some volunteer work in the early 90s in San Francisco Bay Area, it was really strange because you have psychology as a field saying, look at the individual or look at the couple or look at the family. Mm-hmm. But the social context with which there was so much grief and trauma and fear and devastation at that time was social. It was based on the context, the society, the devastation that AIDS was wreaking in our society at that time.
Right.
And it really called upon a different set of skills and tools for those of us that were interested in being therapists and healers within our own communities at that time. Not to ignore the psychology field, but to say that if we're really going to be participants in something different, then we need to be active in this movement.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I started getting involved and active back then.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
then, fast forwarding 20 years, I was living and working in New York City. Mm-hmm. I was doing outreach and education for the vaccine trials that were taking place. It was actually a study called the HVTN 505 trial. And this was a phase two trial looking at the efficacy of a vaccine for HIV. And it was my job to run around New York City and Brooklyn and to go to clubs and bars in the middle of the night and talk to men between the ages of 18 and 50 about sex and about safer sex. And at that time, it was really about condoms and hopefully a vaccine. And that was between 2009 and 2013. But the day before Thanksgiving in 2010, we were called into the office for an emergency meeting because we had to learn about IPREX. And I'm like, it's the day before Thanksgiving. Why do I have to learn about IPREX? There's an iPad, there's an iPhone, there's an iPod. Why do I have to learn about IPREX? Well, it has nothing to do with computers and everything to do with the trial that found out that Truvada taken by HIV negative individuals could significantly reduce the impact of HIV. That someone who is negative and takes this pill daily virtually eliminates the possibility of becoming HIV positive, or at least reduces it by about 99%.
Right. And I think those words are what's important, is the significantly reduces, and that it can bring it down to 99.9% or whatever the percentage is, because so many people go, oh, yes, this fixes everything. Not exactly. So let's not kid ourselves, but let's really understand. And don't you think this is where a lot of people trip up on any of these things, is they hear kind of, well, let's just look at our own political climate right now. We hear the sound bites and then we don't go dig into what really is here.
Yeah, well, I think one of the problems with the way our country thinks and talks about politics or health or anything at this moment is polarized dichotomy, like all or nothing.
Right.
PrEP is not a solution. Truvada is not a cure. This is not a solution. This is not what they call a magic bullet. It is an option that we have that we've never had before in the history of this epidemic, that now we have this choice that's available to us. It is medically available. It is approved by the FDA. It is endorsed by the CDC. It is recommended by the World Health Organization and President Obama, and all insurances in the U.S. pay for it.
Right.
So why not consider this seriously as a tool to end HIV in the next decade?
And so why do you think a lot of people aren't considering it seriously?
Well, I think,
and I'm going to caveat what I just said, because I made a really big generalization there. I'm nobody who's looked at numbers, but I just know in my own circle of friends, as I've asked who is, who isn't, there's kind of, and I think it's generational too, as to who's actually considering using it. I will say that, I don't know, it's not 50-50, but it's probably more 70-30 saying yes and no. So what do you think is the differentiator here?
Well, I think for one thing, education. Most Americans still don't know about PrEP. We don't even know it exists. There has not been any active promotion on behalf of the pharmaceutical company who makes this.
Right.
There has been no national or federal effort on behalf of any health organization or agency to help people learn about this in actual ways. So it's really been a grassroots movement that I have been part of, that local community-based organizations have been part of. Close to you, Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs takes really active steps on this in the last year and a half to help people learn and understand what this is. But there's no like funding or effort nationally to help people, men or women at risk for HIV, to learn. So a lot of what we're talking about here is just people not knowing. Then, because it's grassroots and because social media has played such an essential role in this, that is a blessing and a curse. It is a blessing because you can get the word out. It is a curse because a lot of times people hear about it and they hear the wrong information. Mm-hmm. They hear rumor, they hear speculation, or they hear a fact that's not actually true.
Right.
So that's how they're often learning. They're not getting it from their doctors. They're not getting it from their local health organizations. They're hearing it from their friends on Facebook or their friends on Scrub or Grindr. And sometimes they get the right information, sometimes they don't. But so, I think that's one of the barriers to people acclimating to this.
So in a nutshell, what is the truth? Let's start cutting through this so we can get the right information out. So the truth is, it doesn't prevent STDs. I know that one right off the top of my head. That's one I know for sure.
Right. It does not. However, part of the protocol of using PrEP that most providers follow in the U.S. is having quarterly screens.
Yes.
They are going to ask you to come in quarterly to have your blood drawn to see, make sure you're HIV negative, make sure all your kidneys are functioning well, check you for STIs. So they're doing quarterly checking for syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. And that's a natural part, just kind of an organic part of how this works 3 or 4 times a year.
Right.
Now, as HIV negative man, who was not really connected to healthcare very often before I was on PrEP, you know how often I was getting screened for STIs? Not much.
Probably not. Right.
But now people, myself and people that are using PrEP, are seeing our doctors and getting this kind of prevention, screening, and treatment 3 or 4 times a year for all these other STIs.
Right. Yeah.
So no, it does not prevent transmission of other STIs. That needs to be really, really clear that people understand that. But those quarterly checks stop the spread.
Absolutely. And it's not a cure, as you've already said. It's not a cure.
It's not a cure. It is not a vaccine. What it is a daily pill, which when used consistently in study after study, major international studies, and 3 or 4 dozen clinical demonstration projects that have taken place around the world, they have seen that the efficacy is 99%.
Yeah. That's
maybe
huge.
Even more, but yeah. 99% reduction of risk for individuals who choose to use PrEP, men or women of all ages around the world, by 99% reduction when used as directed. Wow. I think you can remember if we had this 30 years ago, this was around when I started working in this field, when I started volunteering, how many lives could we have saved if we had had this? Well, we can't go back and we can't make that, we can't change history, but we can certainly all be activators of a change.
Sure.
And we can certainly be part of this message and helping people understand what it is now.
Yeah. I lost a family member to AIDS right after the crisis. I mean, literally it was 1982, I believe, when we lost him. And so it was in that time frame when nobody knew what was going on. Everybody was questioning what it was. You know, it was being called the gay disease, blah, 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 all that stuff. You know, as I look at it now and I think about PrEP and decisions that are being made, I often question why this still brings up so much stigma. To me, it's like when the cures for tuberculosis or quote unquote cures and the prevention treatments and everything for tuberculosis and some of the things that have taken our planet by storm and had the possibility of eliminating so many people, I don't quite understand why people get so up in arms, other than the one thing we all know, it's because it's the gay thing. And I find that really affronting because no, it's not just the gay thing. This happens to be something that anyone can contract across the globe.
Yeah, I think it really touches on people's ambivalence about pleasure in our society, specifically when it comes to HIV, which in the U.S. is perceived as a gay disease. And statistically, still, there are more gay men afflicted with this in the U.S., not in other parts of the world, but in the U.S.
Yep.
You get a lot of people who are afraid. And some of that is related to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for survivors from the really first wave of AIDS, people who lost their entire group of friends because of AIDS, because they simply didn't know. And in their minds, they associate sexuality with death. Those two are intertwined. So that's part of some of this anger against PrEP.
Yeah.
The other thing is just basic homophobia and people's idea that it's not okay and it's not acceptable for two men to have pleasurable anal sex without latex barriers, that there's something sinful or pathological or immoral about that, and it needs to be punished if people are doing that. And that's so deeply embedded in our psyche. And as gay men, it's really time for us to look to see in our own minds how we have pathologized and stigmatized the basic pursuit of pleasure.
Yeah.
And how are we actively doing that, perhaps even on an unconscious level? But I do want to say one thing to put this in historical context, because this is not specific. So when we're talking about PrEP and HIV, referring in America specifically to gay men, but if you look historically at how the country reacted to the syphilis cure in the 1930s.
Right.
You saw a very similar reaction. And that was in the straight, there was no gay community. You look back at some of the historical documents and articles that were written around 1938 from the religious moral majority about why people don't deserve access to a cure for syphilis.
Right.
And the whole idea was that if you give people a way to cure syphilis, then it will result in immoral behavior. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to the 30s. And of course, we know what women faced in the 1960s when birth control pills became available.
Yep.
A whole array of horrible, horrible names that were meant to say, if you're a woman, you should, quote, should not enjoy pleasure. You should not have sexual autonomy. And you should be embarrassed and ashamed about your own body. And so anytime we've had medical advances in ways that help people enjoy sex without fear, there has been stigma and there has been pushback. Mm-hmm. And PrEP is just one in line of many, many examples of this.
I find this interesting because I know you deal with this probably a lot in your practice, and I deal with it almost every time a client comes to me to work with me on coming out. This fear of pleasure, as much as they want to be with that person of the same sex, this is always one of those humps we have to get over is, okay, accepting and embracing that I'm going to have this sexual pleasure with someone of the same sex. And at first I try to always align it with them that, okay, but you know, how different was this when you were in high school or, you know, middle school or whatever, when those first feelings started coming up around the potential pleasure of just being with another person, being that heterosexual sort of, you know, thing. It's the same stuff, but yet as they come through the closet doors, it's often one of two directions. And I know you work in both of these directions. It's either they get really fearful about the sexual encounter, or they go completely the other direction and they just go have sex, 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 sex. What do you think is the way we can start to really have a better dialogue around it's okay to be pleasurable, it's okay to have sex? Where would you start that?
I start that by saying what I think PrEP stands for. Now, the medical terminology is that PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. Mm-hmm. On a sexual and spiritual level, it has come for me and at least 100,000 Americans now that are on PrEP, it has really come to mean something else. It has come to mean proactive, responsible, and empowered pleasure. It's proactive because it's done ahead of time. It's not done in the heat of the moment when our brains are not off and functioning rationally. Right. It is done in a mindful, sober, regulatory capacity that every day I take this pill. It is responsible because I am protecting my own body from HIV. I'm also protecting my partners from HIV because if I was HIV positive and didn't know it, I could very possibly transmit it to others. Mm-hmm. And then it's empowering because it is me deciding every day I am going to stay HIV negative today, no matter what happens, no matter who it happens with, I am making the choice to stay HIV negative. And as someone who prefers the bottom bunk, I was going to say, this is the first time in my adult life I've ever had that choice to decide that I will protect my body. It is not someone else's decision. Right. It is not the top's decision to wear a condom or not, or to make sure it doesn't fall off. I get to decide that as the bottom partner that I will remain HIV negative, which is a choice I've never had before. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it is very, very empowering. And then pleasure, as you said, it's that idea that sexuality, that intimacy, that connection can be a beautiful, wonderful, healthy experience. Now, like most gay men, we grow up in a time, and I think it's still this way today, we are constantly being told, consciously or directly or indirectly or insidiously, that sex is bad, that mm-hmm. anal sex is bad, and it's wrong to do it. And if you are going to do it, there has to be eventually a consequence and a punishment for it. Mm-hmm. There has to be something wrong that's going to happen if you enjoy sex too much with too many people. That is so deeply embedded in our psyche as gay men. And I think that's often why we have a really hard time understanding the concept of PrEP and understanding the concept of being able to have sex without the fear of HIV, because it sort of goes against everything we have been conditioned to think and believe and perceive forever. And it's really starting to say to people, wait, what does this mean then? If everything I've been told or everything I've believed my whole life may not be completely accurate or true, then what does that mean? And that's a really difficult existential question for any person to ask themselves. Mm-hmm. What if everything I've learned, or at least some of what I've learned, is wrong?
Exactly. And I think that's the big question that so many people, as we come out of the closet, I know that was one of the questions I had to keep asking myself. What if everything I've been told is wrong?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the journey right there. I mean, I don't even think, I know it's part of the journey, is when you cross over that chasm and go, okay, I accept this isn't wrong. This is who I am, plain and simple, you know? And I often wonder what society would be like. And not that I want everybody to be wide open, free love, whatever, but what society would be like if the pursuit of sexual pleasure wasn't a stigma on any front.
I think you and I would lose a lot of business.
Well, exactly.
I think people would generally feel more empowered and pleasure and, you know, physiological and spiritual and emotional joy in their lives, mm-hmm. and probably have less need to consume alcohol or drugs or candy or sugars, mm-hmm. or need medical treatment or psychological treatment. I think it would be a very, very different world. And, you know, I don't believe in conspiracies per se, but I think there's a lot of structures that are kind of there to make sure that people don't feel too good about themselves. I mean, I wrote my first book, Absolutely Shouldless. What if we all lived in a world where we gave up the word should and we gave up the word normal? What would happen to the plastic surgery community if we all said, I'm going to love my body and I'm going to love all parts of my body. Mm-hmm. I'm going to love all my curves. I'm going to love all my hair. I'm going to love my weight. I'm going to love my wrinkles. Oh my God. Like, what a dive the Botox community would take.
Exactly. You know? But I think so much of society would be affected by this, because you kind of brought it up. Then there wouldn't be any need to turn to drugs. There would be no need to turn to alcohol, maybe overeating. Maybe the gym, you know, might take a dive as well. Because if we just said pleasure comes from pleasure and we're all okay with that, I actually think we would be much healthier as a planet. Because we get to do what I believe, at least the maker that I believe in, wants us to be happy and having pleasure, whatever that pleasure looks like. Pleasure could be this podcast that you were doing right now. It brings me great pleasure to get to do this, you know? So I think we have to look at these different constructs and go, really, what is the real holdback in this pleasure? And what are people truly afraid of is going to happen if everybody was having lots of great pleasurable intimacy and sex?
Right.
What's the worst that could happen? We might be happy.
You could even, you know, I remember in high school reading The Scarlet Letter and saying, wow, this is really what the U.S. is based on. This allegory that if you have pleasure, you will suffer.
Yes.
There will be punishment. There will be consequences. If you're a woman or a minority, you will have consequences to pay for enjoying your body and enjoying sex.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this is a good segue into another area I wanted to chat with you about, is why so many, quote, gay men, and again, I'm doing the generalization. Yes, the air quotes are up, even though none of you can see that. Why do you think so many gay men end up being in that sexual addiction place? Do you think it's this part of this societal, like, okay, you can't be this, so, okay, I'm going to go be this just because this is the only way I can get my pleasure?
Well, I think addiction is a tricky word, because we don't actually have – we kind of have cultural ideas of what addiction is. And then I think each of us who are healers probably have our own perspective. Mm-hmm. When it comes to addiction, I really use the work of Lee Jampolsky, who wrote Healing the Addicted Mind. And it's a wonderful book. It's old, but I encourage people to look it up, because he really talks about addiction as a mindset. Mm-hmm. Anytime we search for something or someone outside of us to make us whole, to make us complete, we set ourselves up for addiction. Mm-hmm. If we say, I need this thing or this relationship or this money or this sex or this drug in order to feel complete, in order to feel joy, mm-hmm. then we set ourselves up to use that thing in an addictive way. So I think sex addiction is not necessarily the problem, but it certainly indicates the symptom of a problem.
Sure.
The problem being is that we are continuously socialized to look outside of ourselves for love, for completion, for validation, for a sense of purpose and a sense of I'm a valid, worthwhile, beautiful human being. If we're using other people for that, yes, you are setting yourself up for some destructive and sometimes really unhealthy patterns of behavior. But that's just as true for sex as it is for drugs. And it can even be used for – I've seen people use work and money in similar ways.
Of course. Anything can become, quote, the addiction, you know, the thing that's the external pursuit of pleasure. In fact, this morning I was just watching a YouTube video of another guest that's getting ready to be on the podcast. And she's a spouse of a gay man who came out late in life. And her name is Emily Reese. And her message was so compelling because she talked to both sides of the fence. She talked to this straight spouse. She talked to the homosexual spouse who's coming out. And the one thing that I found just riveted me was when she said, "I appreciate my husband coming out because it made me see and love myself." Right. It took her inside herself to go, "I don't have to rely on him for my happiness. And if I learn nothing from that, that's what I learned from this experience." And of course, I was like, yes, this is what I wish I could have said it myself, because that's the whole point to me is, no, I know I'm a son of a bitch. I will never not say I was a son of a bitch for being married all these years and then coming out of the closet late in life. Okay, I get that. I own that. But there's pieces of this that become the journey that each of us are on to seeing ourselves in the way we are meant to see ourselves. And she summed it up just really beautifully. So in this discussion around, you know, prep and should or shouldn't we, and, you know, addiction and all this sort of stuff, do you think that prep literally, as some would say, gives people a license to just go fuck like rabbits, so to speak?
Well, if there is such a license, where do I apply for it?
Yeah, it's like, thank you. I'll be right in line behind you. So there we go.
I'll wait in line for that, even if it's like at the DMV. Which, right. You know, it's like, do people need a license to enjoy sex without condom latex barriers? I don't
thank
know.
You.
How
thank
did you,
you
get here, Rick? Yeah. How did I get here? How did everybody listening to this get here? Apparently, humans have been having sex without condoms for billions of years. So, you know, I don't really think that it necessarily preps.
Exactly.
That we're here today. Again, I started in this field in 1991. And by 1991, we understood that latex condoms worked very, very well to protect one from HIV if they were used consistently. So I was one of those people in San Francisco that worked with an organization, and we would stand on the street corners. We would be at Market and Noe in front of Cafe Floor, and we would be giving out condoms and making people pledge to use condoms 100% of the time. And it made sense because literally back then, if you didn't use a condom, your life could be at stake.
Exactly.
I ask you and I ask your listeners, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Even with all of that information and our good intentions, that did not stop HIV from spreading. And back then, the rates were much higher. Back then, there were about 80,000 new infections a year. Since the mid-90s, it's came down to 50,000, and we have been holding steady at about 50,000 new infections every year in the U.S. since the mid-90s. So if condoms were so effective at preventing HIV, why do we still have 50,000 new infections in the U.S. each year, which 44% of which are African-American men?
Yep, yep.
You know, so men of color, so 44% are African-American men, 12% are Latino men. Mm-hmm. So if these condoms were so brilliant at preventing HIV, why weren't people using them 20, 30 years ago?
Absolutely. So I want to make sure we really cover something here, though, with your quote pointing out the men of color piece.
Yeah.
I want people to understand this isn't like, okay, they're at fault because they're men of color.
No.
There's other stuff that comes from this, and do your education and your homework, folks. There's cultures, those races are much more affected for many, many reasons. We're not pointing the finger here going, they're the culprits. By no means is that what we're saying.
No, no. There is systematic racism and health disparities that contribute to these numbers.
Yes.
But according to the CDC, if these numbers were to remain as they are today, that 1 in 2 gay or bisexual African-American men can expect to become HIV positive in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. 1 in 2. Now, that need not be.
Right.
There is an opportunity to change that. But if well-intentioned healthcare professionals keep using the word should when they're talking to people who are different from themselves and keep telling people what they should do with their bodies and keep being prescriptive and authoritarian and judgmental, then these numbers may continue. And this is really the opportunity that we have with PrEP, that we have as healers, whether we're educators or doctors or physician assistants or activists, is to say, let's change the script. We need to do differently than we have been doing the past 35 years. We need to use a different set of skills and tools. That means you don't tell people what they should do with their bodies or what they should not do with their body. And I wrote an entire book about this called Absolutely Should List. That was almost 10 years ago that I wrote this book about how destructive these messages are when you're talking about healthcare and you're talking about wellness. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity to do things differently. And we can, all of us, everybody listening, have the opportunity to be part of this change.
So give us an example of a beautiful way to have that discussion, because I know that would probably help some of the listeners who may be just coming out. They're going to have the should talk at some point from somebody, or they're going to have the consideration of, would I like to, which I think is one of the ways to talk about this, is would I like to be on PrEP? That's the way to talk to yourself, not should I be on, would I like to? What are the advantages to me? But I'd love to hear some of the ways you would talk to someone about how they could make these decisions without you should be doing this.
So I would ask to anyone who's considering this, to any gay man, if you were a woman and you had the choice to be on birth control pills, would you use that choice? Mm-hmm. If there was a vaccine to protect you from HIV, would you take that vaccine? Mm-hmm. Now, the answer to both of those questions are yes. Then you may want to consider using PrEP. Now, remember, PrEP is not a lifetime choice. You don't have to use it the rest of your life. Right. Like women who use birth control pills, they may use it during times in their lives when they might be at risk of an unwanted consequence of pleasurable sex. Mm-hmm. Gay men and women can use PrEP in a similar way. You use it when you need it. You don't have to use it if you don't need it. But if you are in any way at potential risk for becoming HIV positive, you may wish to consider this as being an option to stay HIV negative.
So I'm going to go for the kind of little white elephant in the room that I know both you and I probably know about, but the listeners don't. Then there's the argument that if you are on PrEP and you contract the virus, then it's a little bit less effective. So kind of talk us through that from your perspective.
Okay. So let's just be very clear about the reality.
That's why I'm bringing this up.
Over 100,000 people using PrEP in the United States. We don't even know how many people are using it in other parts of the world because nobody's tracking it. There has only been one instance of an individual who was using Truvada for PrEP consistently and became HIV positive anyway. Mm-hmm. And that one individual, this was presented at a scientific conference in February. It was an individual in Toronto. The scientists were able to look at his blood and they were able to see, yes, he took this every day. Unfortunately, he acquired HIV from an individual who was HIV positive, not on medications, had a very detectable viral load. And unfortunately, this person had been on treatment previously and had built resistance to five different HIV medications, with two of them being the medications that are in the drug Truvada. Unfortunately, in this one instance in Toronto, an individual acquired this strain of HIV that was resistant to some of the treatment medications. Now, Rick, when you and I hear the word resistant, I think we tend to think if you're resistant to a medication, it means you can't take it. In medical terms, that's not actually the case. In medical terms, resistant, the more accurate term might be sensitive. So in other words, he was resistant to five different medications. It doesn't mean he can't take them to treat HIV. It just means he needs a different combination of medicines that an HIV positive person would typically use. Yep. He is still taking he's still using tenofovir, which is one of the medicines to treat HIV. Mm-hmm. And I know he was using it initially when he became positive in order to make his viral load suppressed, even though he had resistance to it.
Got it.
So that's a really important difference for people to know.
Exactly.
If you really want to take precautions and you really want to be concerned about your safety, think about gun control. And I don't want to go on a whole nother tangent. Honestly, I am so much more worried about getting shot in the U.S. right now than I am about becoming HIV positive while using PrEP.
Absolutely.
Because that is much more a reality in my world right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason I went down that route is when I looked at this and my husband and I looked at this, that was kind of the simplistic message they sent is, if you contract, then you will not be able to fight the virus based on this. And I thought, that doesn't sound 100% right to me.
The only person this ever happened to was able to successfully suppress his viral load in 30 days after they discovered he was positive. And why did they discover he was positive with this highly unusual strain of HIV? Mm-hmm. Because he was on PrEP and going to regular medical visits. Mm-hmm. Now imagine what would have happened if he was not on PrEP and acquired HIV from this individual with this unusual strain and did not get regular checkups.
Exactly.
How far the virus could have compromised his immune system, had a chance to do so.
And these are the important differences to really bring up, and that's why I wanted to go down that route.
Now, I just wanted to, here's where the confusion comes in, is because it is actually incredibly important, and if people hear nothing else, it is so important that if anyone is considering using PrEP, that they only do so with a confirmed HIV negative test. Mm-hmm. And here's why. In all of these research trials and studies, there were some people who began using Truvada as PrEP without being confirmed HIV negative first, or they took a test and they were still in the window period. So they were HIV positive and they didn't know it. Then they took Truvada by itself. Then their virus overcame Truvada and they did become resistant to the medicines in Truvada. That's different from the one case we were talking about. Mm-hmm. But this is the important distinction, and this is why it's really, really important that people not stop and start on their own. If anyone wants to use Truvada's PrEP, great. Just please don't do it on your own casually without a doctor confirming your HIV negative first. Because if, for some reason, you were HIV positive and you didn't know it, those are the cases where the virus can build resistance. Because Truvada by itself is not enough to suppress a viral load in a person who is already positive. And in those instances, that is when the virus overcomes the drug and builds resistance to it. And I think that's the message that's getting confused and getting distorted out there.
It is getting distorted. And I'm so glad that you came on today and helped sort through this. And I would love to have you back for other reasons down the road in the future, because I think you're a great guy. Even though
I think you're great too.
Even though we just hooked up today, I know you're a great guy, just from what I can tell. So one of the questions I always ask at the very end of these episodes is, if you could leave someone, and this doesn't have to be about PrEP, but if you could leave someone with some piece of advice from your professional background, your personal experience, being a gay man coming out yourself, that would help someone who tunes in and listens to the Coming Out Lounge, what would be something you'd like to leave the listeners with?
That life doesn't have to be so hard, and that there's actual proven ways to use your mind and your thoughts to have a better day. And as we are aging as gay men, I think we are in this unprecedented moment in history where we have more social acceptance than ever before. We have more legal protections than ever before. We have more medical advancements than ever before. But we haven't really been offered the tools and the skills to know what to do to enjoy or have fun or peace with any of that. Consider for yourself what it means to be proactive, responsible, and empowered about your pleasure in your own life. That might mean PrEP, that might mean condoms, that might mean abstinence, that might mean monogamy, that might mean some combination of all of the above. Just to take stock of your life. You have a right to empowered pleasure and protection. Use that and listen to this podcast and read Rick's blog, because it's great. And consider learning about these ways to really embrace power, purpose, and pleasure over the long run. My pleasure.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out?
Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.